brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Tangible, Theology Learned and Lived. We're exploring the ways in which theology permeates all aspects of life. Through conversations with faculty at Concordia Seminary St. Louis, we will challenge you to deepen your theology and live out your faith in Christ. I'm your producer and host, Jessica Bordolo. I'll talk with a variety of professors on a variety of topics, something different every episode, but all pointing to the intersection of faith and daily life, because it's tangible, theology learned and lived. Today we're talking about the ways in which we interact with them, the people with whom we strongly disagree about deeply held beliefs. This us versus them polarization is everywhere, from sports to politics to religion. This topic is a focus point of the newly published book, How the Light Shines Through, Resilient Witness in Dark Times. We have the book's author in the studio today, Dr. Chad Lekees. He's the Vice President for Ministry Engagement at Lutheran Hour Ministries. Dr. Lekees has a degree in psychology and philosophy from the University of Michigan, and his Master's of Divinity and PhD from Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. He was a theology faculty member at Concordia University, Portland, and Regional Director for North America at Lutheran Hour Ministries. Dr. Lekees, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jessica. Super happy to be here.
The author of the introduction to Dr. Lekees' book is with us in the studio today as well. You might recognize his voice. Dr. Dale Meyer is most known for his 12 years as the speaker of the Lutheran Hour. He has served as a parish pastor, seminary professor, and was the president of Concordia Seminary St. Louis for 15 years. Dr. Meyer, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be with you, Jessica. I gave up my morning shuffleboard to come and be with you and Dr. Lekees.
That is an honor. We're talking about Dr. Chad Lekees' book, How the Light Shines Through, Resilient Witness in Dark Times. The focus of our discussion today centers on the themes in the third chapter of the book titled, How Not to Let Issues Prevent Relationships. Dr. Lekees, why does that matter?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's mattered for a long time now and people have felt it deeply. There was a great social survey that came out a little before 2020 that said something around 93% of us are frustrated and exhausted by how divided we are, but we don't know what to do about it. And I think in the media environment in which we live, whether it's social media or news media or radio media, we see a lot of people finding ways to slice and divide and discriminate against people with whom they disagree on any number of things, from the trivial to the most sacred. And it's fracturing our society. It's fracturing our culture. And it's hurting people. Marriages are breaking. Parents are stopping talking to their kids. Kids are stopping talking to their parents. Friends are being divided from friends. Colleagues from colleagues. And so we feel it. That's why it's important to try to address this.
And how do those issues prevent relationships?
Culturally, we have been formed to think that when I bump into somebody who thinks differently, believes differently, has different opinions than I do, I've got to disassociate from them in order, for example, not to be infected by their ideas, or in order not to be accused of being associated with people who have whatever might be the culturally unorthodox ideas of the day. And so how this came to be, I can't exactly say. I think there are a number of factors we could point to that have contributed to it. It'd be probably a really complicated story. What I can say is it's real. And it isn't just social surveys that tell us this. We feel it. We experience it. We know people that it's happened to, and perhaps it's happened to some of us. So trying to get a handle on what we can do to address it in a way that's faithful and follows in the way of Jesus, that's what I was after in this chapter. And I think as Christians, we've got a totally different foundation to come from. If there was any reason to let an issue prevent a relationship, Jesus Christ has it with every last one of us, right? And Paul acknowledges that in Romans 5. While we were still his enemies, Christ died for us. And so because that has been overcome by Jesus, there's nothing standing in the way for us to maintain relationships with people, even across the deep divides of disagreement.
I think the church has generally been ineffective in dealing with this. I think the church, in many cases, shows these same symptoms. And that's a great thing about Chad's book. I think thoughtful Christians will read this and say, yeah, wait a minute, that does make sense. And we as church can improve.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm pointing out bad habits that apply to everybody. And so in this chapter, I didn't necessarily target any particular group. It's more a symptom of the social environment in which we live. We're affected by this, and we end up taking up the habits unwittingly, often, of, you know, the knee-jerk reaction of immediately reacting to somebody who disagrees with me. Well, we can't be friends. I can't talk with you.
How do outsiders see us as Christians when we act like that?
I think that's a great question. I think, well, let me tackle it from this angle. I think there are a lot of Christians who like to say right now that they're victims of a hostile culture. And that's really preventing us from being able to freely live as Christians. But I think the way that we have lived as Christians, by being known primarily for what we're against rather than what we're for, the antagonism started with us. We're the culture critics more often, and I think that's how they receive and perceive us. And so the hostility that we get is probably reasonable in many respects, because it's just a reaction to the antagonism that we've put out there. Not to mention the fact that there's this huge trust deficit that we're in as an institution in the West in general. And I would say so much of that has come from a lot of what the media has shared since the 1990s with the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. But then we found out it wasn't just the Catholic Church that had moral failures. It was almost every Christian body. It could have been abuses of power, abuses of finances and business practices. It could have been, you know, relational abuses in a variety of ways beyond just things that were related to sexuality. The world has learned that the Christian church doesn't always live up to its own standards, right? And I'm always one to say that the accusation of being a hypocrite is one I will own forever. But that's why I'm a follower of Jesus, because I need his help to not be that kind of person.
Yeah, this is very well documented. Dr. Lekees has read more about this than I have. I think of the Barna Group, for example. And the Barna Group works with Lutheran Hour Ministries, to everyone's credit. Young people turn the church off because they see the hypocrisies, which we ourselves don't see because we're so in the tank.
Yes.
We can justify it, but young people are leaving us in droves because they see the phoniness of what we say and then what we actually do.
Right. Why would you want to join a club like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a club like that. You know, that's the way I think we often think of ourselves. We're a club. No, no, no. We're Jesus called disciples to be different in this world.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said individually and institutionally as Christians, we have a trust deficit. Dr. Meyer, you're for a long time of two institutions within our church, Lutheran Hour and the seminary, were the public face of those institutions, right? So did you feel that when as people responded to you?
It came up often, and one of the things that I noticed is that when you're on the inside of the institution, you tend to think corporately according to the way a business does things. Now, there's some of that aspect, right? Seminary, LHM has budgets and so on, personnel policies and all of that. But one of the things I would tell people, I don't care if you're the custodian, the president, whatever, you are the face of this institution. Don't you ever tell somebody who calls up, that's not my department, you'll have to go elsewhere. So I think institutions are in a difficult situation because they're living in both worlds. But Christianity, being a follower of Jesus, means you're going to go along and listen to this person who's complaining about whatever, as best you can. And maybe you say, yeah, no, I don't see it that way, but let's talk again.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Lakeys, as a past professor, you were teaching students that were not all Christians, but you were a theology teacher, and so you were the face of Christianity to them. Did you experience that as well?
I didn't experience it in any direct ways, really. For whatever reason, I stumbled upon just trying to be as real, as authentic of a Christian as they could ever experience. And I just said, look, I am going to be the same guy to you in this classroom as I will be when I'm leading chapel, as I will be when you see me on the sidewalk and we're passing by on campus, as you'll see me in the kitchen trying to cook dinner and manage my family if I'm having you around for dinner. You're not going to get a different person out of me. And through that, I just tried to build trust and let them test that out. Over the period of the relationship, they could see whether or not it was true. And through that, I also was able to say, look, I can't overcome my own hypocrisy. I need the help of Jesus, right? It comes from outside.
I think that's great. You know, Aristotle said one of the ways that we persuade people is just by being open, transparent. He called it ethos, and then the emotional bond is pathos. And that's what we need in this 21st century. The days of pontificating that we as a church are right, or we as a political party, whatever, we are right and you're wrong, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So that transparency, I think that's a great point.
So we're talking about insiders and outsiders and how outsiders see the church. Dr. Lakeys, you have a whole life experience as a non-believer before you became a believer. So you were on the outside.
That's right.
Can you tell me your story?
Sure. So I grew up in a nominally Christian household, Roman Catholic. We didn't have anything going on in our household really that would make faith sticky. No faith formation practices or anything. So we weren't reading the Bible. We weren't praying together. We did not attend church regularly together. No devotions, you know, nothing like that. But my parents still thought it was important that me and my two younger siblings were catechized. So we went through Roman Catholic catechism classes. And it's very similar to a lot of what Lutherans practice in that regard. I was confirmed in eighth grade. But because there was nothing to really make it sticky, and as I was reaching the rebellious teenage years of 13 and 14, I looked for my first opportunity to sort of unload that obligation, especially the random obligation that would come up, totally arbitrary. We're going to go to church this Sunday. And it always made me uncomfortable to go because I didn't know what to do, right? There was standing up and sitting down and kneeling, and there was something similar to our hymnal, but they called it a missal. And navigating that and knowing what to say, when to say it, and how to find it in the book, didn't know how to do it. So I was very uncomfortable, right? It's a cultural thing to be assimilated into, and I never was going regularly enough to be assimilated. So anyhow, I found the first ticket out in freshman biology class with a theory of evolution and really thought, this just makes a lot of sense. And so for me, I developed a lot of questions that came out of science, philosophical questions. But there's a parallel story. So as I'm getting late in high school, I had been playing drums since I was very little. I was involved in music, organized music as early as I could be. And by the time I was done with high school, I had been busy all year long, busier than any athlete I knew because there were so many opportunities to be involved. And I've played so much music, so many different kinds, so many different venues. But the last thing I was doing was a Blues Brothers cover band. We rehearsed in one of the singer's garages, and his mom happened to be the local Lutheran church's praise band leader and asked me to come and play drums for their band, but while I was still a non-believer. And I had to think about that for a few minutes because I wanted to be sure they knew what my thoughts were about Christianity, right? I wasn't with them. I wasn't there. I didn't believe in God. I wasn't religious in any way. And they were like, yeah, we know. And I said, okay, well, I'll do it if you pay me, right? And we made it a gig so that it was a kind of semi-professional thing for me, right? So I could ethically go do the job that they wanted me to do, do a good job, not have to buy into what they would do, but they'd have good reason to fire me if I were to speak up and complain and put down their ideas and their views. So they took a risk, a real risk for church leaders to invite me to do that. But then there I was for 6 months immersed in hearing the word, playing Christian music. Prayer was happening around me and for me. People were moved to pray for this outsider, this non-believer who came in. But for me personally, I wasn't aware that any of that was happening until after the fact. What I was aware of was I was welcomed with some of the most genuine Christian hospitality I'd ever experienced. And that happened through just the fact that these people were excited that they had a live drummer, which they had never had before. And then two, they loved music in the same way that I did. And they were a much more mature musician, so I wanted to, you know, have my A game every time I came in. When I played in church, I also experienced the fact that I feel like I play better and I'm having more fun here than any other venue. And I couldn't explain why. What I wanted, if I was to really believe in this God they were talking about, was for him to write it on the wall or speak in an audible voice or what have you, and that didn't happen. But these two experiences, the hospitality and the welcome and the experience of playing drums for me, led me to a tipping point 6 months later. And everything changed for me at that point. Within 6 months, I thought, I think maybe I should go to seminary. And these people had gotten to know me for a year by that point, and they said, yeah, we see the aptitude in you. They encouraged it. I ended up being employed by that church for the last couple of years of my college degree in studies, and just continued to be poured into by those leaders. I married the pastor's daughter. We've been married 22 years, and yeah, so that was my journey, and thinking about what I've written and the theological work that I try to do in all the places I've been, in the university setting, at Lutheran Hour Ministries, I can't set aside my background of being an outsider. I always wonder how the church can better reach people like I used to be.
It wasn't a sit-down conversation or an argument that convinced you. It was the relationships people had with you.
It was that, and looking back, being in that environment where the word was preached, right? It never returns void. Where Christian songs were becoming a part of who I was, you know, because rehearsing them, practicing them, playing them, music gets into your bones in a way, right? Songs are running in your head. And so that was happening. And indeed, 200 some people were praying for me. Some of whom I'll never meet this side of the resurrection life. My parents were a little concerned that I joined a cult, that the transition was so drastic. Yeah.
What difference has that made to you as a theologian and as a preacher?
As a theologian, I'd say when I was teaching at Concordia Portland, I just wanted my students to see a Christian for real. I wanted them to know the truth. I loved teaching in that environment with half of my class being outsiders in some way, shape, or form. With a number of the Christians being there because, say, their parents sent them to a Christian school. But now that they were at college, they were falling away from actively practicing because nobody is forcing them to do it. I just wanted them to have a warm, winsome experience for me in the classroom with what we were learning. When we convert as adults, we often do it through relationships based on trust. And those take a while to develop. And it might take many more than one person to bring someone in touch with Jesus. But every time they interact with one of us who is a Christian, they meet Jesus in us, just as St. Paul says, right? It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And so we really lean on that. And I like the freedom and the fact that there's no pressure to close the deal like other kind of outreach programs and methods sort of have it. You know, you don't have to have a sinner's prayer at the end of this conversation. You don't have to be setting up an adult baptism and next Sunday service and enrolling this person in the adult confirmation classes. You just have to be their friend. And when the Lord leads and gives you an opportunity, hopefully you'll be ready to share with them how much Jesus means to you and how much he cares for them.
That's great. The Holy Spirit is in charge of this evangelism effort. Over the years, I've had any number of people who were concerned about the salvation of someone in their family or a friend. And what can I do? What can I do? And the answer is, you know, do your part appropriately, the proper kind of relationship. You know, share your faith, but don't beat them up with your faith, because the Holy Spirit has other people he's bringing into this game. The other thing that popped into my mind, and you're just giving me a lot of thoughts, is that Thomas Long, in his homiletic book, said that the preacher goes to the scriptures on behalf of the people. In other words, what question is Chad LaKey, the unbeliever in our praise band, what is he asking? And then a good preacher is going to go into his study, into the scriptures, and see, try and find an answer to those real questions. One of the faults we have, and I'm sure I'm guilty of this a lot, is we get into the pulpit and answer our questions or what we think should be the questions of the people. And in the 21st century, nah, that doesn't work. What are the people, even the people who are Christians, what are they really wondering about? So that's another great point.
Yeah, well, and I think how not to let issues prevent relationships is something Christians are wondering about. And that's what ended up bringing about the writing of this book, is that I was already giving talks on that topic that ended up getting standing room only audiences that I didn't expect, because I don't think anybody was coming to see me. It's not like Chad LaKey walks around with the Mr. Charisma. I'm pretty quiet. I'm pretty introverted. I'm difficult to get to know. At least I think, and people have affirmed that, but talking about the topics, I think I discovered I was addressing questions that were hitting a nerve. And I was willing to handle those questions from a deeply informed Christian perspective in a way that people started to find helpful. And so it was after that that I approached Concordia to see if they'd be interested in publishing all of this in one package.
You are the Oracle of Delphi.
No way.
So, Dr. Meyer, you come to us with a lot of experience as a pastor and as a preacher and as an administrator of Christian institutions. But you've also always have had an ear open to the outsider, at least in my observations of your preaching and what I've gotten to know of you. I don't know how you became a Christian or if you were an outsider, but what brought your attention to that? Why have you always kind of had an eye out for outsiders? That's not very common.
I was born on January 10th in another century, and I was baptized on January 26th in our home, because I think my parents were embarrassed to show me in public. You know, they're kind of disappointed with what they got. I don't know. So I've always been in the church. I've always, for whatever reason, been interested in theology. But here's the answer, Jessica. My dad was a milkman, a blue-collar guy. Younger people don't know what a milkman is anymore, but we won't go there. He was a blue-collar guy, and that's what I am. I put on a suit and tie when I have to, when the work requires it. But I'd rather be identified as a blue-collar guy who can go out and work with the guys. That's where people live. I find nothing as stifling as being with a bunch of theologians. But and one of the great things about Concordia Seminary is you won't find the faculty up in Luther Tower. Almost all of the faculty members have some real-world contacts that they're doing.
That's the goal of this show, is that theology is tangible. It is real. It is something that you learn, right? The academic pursuit and studying God. How exciting is that? But mm-hmm. if it stays there, then it's just a class.
Right.
But when it's in your life, you're living your theology. So how do we do it? How do you not let issues prevent relationships?
Yeah, good question. Start with Jesus. He never let an issue prevent a relationship, right? Great examples in the scriptures. John 4, when he meets the woman at the well, right? He said to his disciples in John, I think 4:4, that we have to go through Samaria, which is something that people like him never did, right? They didn't intersect with them. He goes and he meets this woman, and she comes to believe that he's the Messiah, and then heads back to her town and encourages the same townsfolk to come out and meet this Jesus. You know, he calls this rich tax collector down out of the tree, right? He was a wee little man, as children sing about in Sunday school. And we have no idea what the interaction really looked like, except for the fact that Jesus called Zacchaeus down out of the tree and said, I will dine in your home tonight, right? He was self-identifying with the bad ones, with the outsiders, with the them. But what came out of that was this interaction with Jesus. You know, Zacchaeus comes out and says, I'll pay back four times what I've swindled. And there was a conversion that happened there. And I think every interaction with Jesus is one where we're all going to walk away changed. So you can see through a number of passages, Jesus always left opportunity for a relationship, even with the most stubborn, right? When he talked even sharply with the Pharisees, Luke 15, the very end of that chapter is the parable of the two lost sons. We have no idea if the older son, who's a representative of the scribes, the Pharisees, the religious officials, from all the way back in the beginning of that chapter, the first two verses where it describes the audience, we have no idea if the older son goes into the party. But what we know is Jesus stands there with arms open, right? In very much a cruciform posture. And Jesus there as the character of the Father, right? He was always that way. It's part of our tradition, even in the confessions, right? The preamble and the introduction of all of our confessional documents. There's hope that the church will come around, right? That we won't forever be divided. And so I think starting with Jesus is the place to start. And then there are other things that I bring in, just recognizing our own bad habits. We, as human beings, don't always listen well. We sometimes think listening is waiting for our turn to speak, right? To push back. Or we go into refutation mode when we hear somebody that we disagree with. I borrow this from Alan Jacobs. He says, we stop up our ears and we think of all the ways that we're going to torpedo that person's argument. And we miss the opportunity to listen fully. But there's a lot of great advice in the Christian tradition to listen fully. Part of it starts with our ability to see others as Jesus sees them, as fully human, right? Take the time to listen just to humanize them, to fully understand, not label them, not assume that you understand everything about them and their lives and where they're coming from and what they believe or what they would believe, teach, and confess based on the one thing that they've said that you seriously disagree with, but listen fully. You might actually hear nuance, contextualization, a number of things that will settle down your desire to argue against them. But then you've also got Augustine and Anselm who say things like, I believe in order to understand, or talked about faith seeking understanding, and they have bequeathed to the church a posture of intellectual humility. There is not a single one of us that knows everything. There's certainly not a single one of us that can read the hearts and minds and souls of others. So, you know, stepping back and sort of situating ourselves into a more humble position that allows us to listen well and really understand another person, it's good for both of us, right? I get to meet them fully. They might reciprocate then and invite me to say where I'm coming from. And we may end up continuing to disagree, but we disagree better. We don't necessarily have to break off our friendship or our relationship when we disagree.
Let me ask, case in point. I know somebody, this person is deep in a tank for an ideology.
Yeah.
And it is always in my face.
Yep.
And it pushes me away. Nice enough person if we could get past this insistence on pushing the ideology.
Mm-hmm.
How do I deal with that?
Gosh, that's one of the hardest things, because I think our gut reaction is to try constantly, because we care about this person, we believe they're misled, to present counter evidence and ask them questions that we hope gets them to question their thinking and so on, and it just never works. Psychologists, sociologists have always recommended against that move. It's futile, they say. Instead, I think we've just got to wait for them to have some sort of experience that the Slovenian philosopher Slavoj Žižek would call an eruption of the real. What he's really talking about is, you know, the world pushes back, right? On whatever we believe or think or we're wrapped up in, the truth of reality pushes back on us. And I think we've got to wait for them to have that experience. What I did write about in the book is what we see happen to the cartoon character Wile E. Coyote when he's chasing the Roadrunner. That the Roadrunner always tricks him, and so often he's tricked into running off of a cliff, and there the scene stops. He looks down, he looks up, he looks at you, the viewer on the screen, right? And we all realize that in that moment he figured out that he's been tricked, right? When he thought he was going to succeed, it's supposed to be a humorous moment, right? He looks down again and falls to his doom. Well, I think the role that we play as Christians is to be there at the bottom, to catch those people who are caught in an ideology. We're the community that's able to be there when they realize they were wrong. And probably having been rejected and ignored and relationships broken because of the ideology and the forcefulness that they may have been using to press on other people, like you're talking about, has pushed so many away. But we're the ones who can still be there.
So don't destroy the relationship, but don't engage in arguments. Just kind of lay back and watch what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yep. And when it whatever happens, the eruption of the real, you know, be available to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
That is also, I think, the theology of the cross. Yeah. Luther's 28 Theses at Heidelberg. Human love seeks what is attractive to it. The love born of the cross goes to what is not attractive. And through Christ and forgiveness and love, makes that sinner attractive to God.
Mm-hmm.
And we deal too much with human love and attraction. I mean, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The theology of the cross, what you're saying about Jesus, totally different way of going at people.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you. I think Christians are afraid of witnessing and telling others about Jesus. Some of our research at Lutheran Hour with Barna has, tried to deal with that very question. What is it really going to be like when you have a faith-sharing conversation? And what we've discovered is the evidence goes totally the opposite direction. People walk away from those conversations full of joy. And even if they're talking with someone that isn't really interested, someone that we would call unreceptive, they're not thinking negatively about the Christian. The relationship isn't going to be broken because they heard about Jesus, because this person shared their faith with them. They'll probably carry on with the relationship, but it'll just be something that they end up not talking about anymore. And for a season, that might be fine, right? It might not be you then. God is still at work. The Holy Spirit is the one who works faith. It's not your responsibility, but we've got to suffer through the outcomes of what it's like to engage with somebody who doesn't receive Jesus in the way that we have. Right, who doesn't know his love in the way that we have received it.
That was Monica, the mother of St. Augustine.
Yes.
He was out
of the faith
for a long, long time, and she went to Anselm, and Anselm's advice was just what you said, hang in there, and eventually he became St. Augustine.
The final question on the show is always this: what do you want our listeners to remember?
I want our listeners to remember that Jesus never let an issue prevent a relationship. That starts first with them. That is the gospel for them. Never let an issue prevent a relationship. It begins with the Holy Spirit at work in our lives and in our relationships so that Jesus is there in our midst, even with people with whom we most vehemently disagree. It doesn't mean we've got to cut them off or disassociate. Jesus could have cut all of us off. And he didn't. And so we should not do that with others either.
Dr. Meyer, what do you want our listeners to remember?
This is kind of from a blue-collar guy. Get the book. Read the book. Have your Bible class or book club or friends. Read the book. It's great.
Thank you.
That's it for today. We've been discussing one aspect of Dr. Chad Lakey's book, How the Light Shines Through, Resilient Witness in Dark Times. You can find a link on our website to the book. I've read it. There's a lot more in the book. I'm impressed with it, and you should read it. I'd like to thank our guests. Dr. Lakey, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Jessica, for having me. It's been super fun.
Dr. Meyer, thanks for coming back on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
and thank you for listening. You can find more episodes of Tangible on all the major hosting apps or on our website, concordiatheology.org. We have a lot more free resources there. Check it out. If you'd like to see the show continue, you can subscribe for free, share, leave a review. I'm your producer and host, Jessica Bordolo. Join me next time when we talk about the intersection of theology and daily life, because it's tangible. Theology learned and lived.